This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Political analysts say that Botswana is a unique case in Africa. Not only is it a stable nation that has had peaceful elections and transfer of power since its independence in 1966, but also the diamond-rich nation has used its resources to benefit its citizens by providing them with free healthcare and education. Currently, Botswana ranks fourth in sub-Saharan Africa for GDP per capita. That's according to the World Bank. And as the Botswana head to the polls, I am joined by Ambassador Paul Churchill Maputeng, Ambassador of the Republic of Botswana to the United States. He's going to talk to us about the country's political landscape, its economic growth, and democratic legacy.
Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us, first of all. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Jackson.
Your country is getting ready for an election at the end of this month, October 30th. How are preparations going on? Give us a little bit of a comparison between what is happening in America. We know the campaign environment, the atmosphere. How are things in Botswana as you're getting ready for the 30th?
Thank you so much, Jackson. First of all, let me thank you for inviting me to the studio. But since you have asked the question about elections in Botswana, the mood right now is a very vibrant and a very lively mood. The campaigns are going all over the place. Botswana, it might be a small country, but it's a bigger country in terms of the stretch of the country. And the candidates have to actually cover a lot of ground in Botswana. Just yesterday, there were presidential debates, four presidential candidates going head on. Including the current president, Mokgweetsi Eric Kiabetso Masisi. The UDC was represented by Duma Boko, and the BCP by Dumelan Salashanto, and then the BPF by Mepato Kiatil. So it was very lively, it's very active, and everybody is actually campaigning. Mm-hmm. Members of parliament, council seats, and it's just happy and jovial. But the good thing about Botswana, everything is so free. And, you know, we are hoping that it actually go on until, you know, the end,
yeah.
Which I'm very optimistic that will actually happen.
The end, you know, the election day.
The election day, yes.
So tell us about Botswana. I mean, one of the most celebrated countries in terms of multi-party politics, one of the most stable countries on the continent. What is the secret? How has Botswana been able to stay stable and have continuous peaceful transfers of power from one leader to the next?
Actually, just last month, we are celebrating our 58th independence celebrations. We also had an opportunity to celebrate it in Washington, D.C., and other areas of the U.S. by the diaspora. And this has been a very long journey for 58 years. We are looking forward to the 60th independence celebrations year after next. But the best thing that I can actually say in terms of what has kept us to where we are today as a very stable democracy, the longest undisturbed democracy in Africa, it really boils down to the issue of leadership. And this leadership goes back to our founding fathers, Cesare Sekgama. And during the founding days, three critical things that he basically laid out was an issue of unity, good governance, and democracy. This is what has actually sustained Botswana for a very long time. And the president that actually succeeded, including the current president, maintained that critical path.
Mm. Now, while Botswana is a stable democracy, like you said, there are concerns about the strength of the opposition parties. You say that you had a presidential debate yesterday. I wanted to ask you about the opposition. What role does the opposition, although the opposition parties, play in Botswana, and what challenges do they face in creating a competitive political environment?
Yes, I think it's not necessarily something that it's restricted to the opposition. It includes the ruling party. As you all know, that when it comes to campaigns, it's one of the most expensive things for all the party. Mm-hmm. Particularly in a country like Botswana, which stretches for many, many kilometers, The roads are not that favorable in some areas of the country, and candidates have to traverse the road, and it takes a very long time. So it's very costly. That's very costly, and it all happens in all countries when it comes to campaigns, when you have to advertise, when you have to mobilize people, when you have to go from door to door and campaigning to people. That's money. It boils down to the issue of money. Mm-hmm. But the good thing about the environment in Botswana is as you do that, you absolutely have no disturbance.
There are no roadblocks
from anybody who's setting up for you. Everybody's cheering. It's so amazing that when I was actually even watching some video clips of the campaigns back home, you'll find literally a motorcade of one political party and another one just coming behind. Wow. And everybody is just in a jovial mood and cheering. And I think that's the most important thing. You never see people throwing stones at each other, you know, shouting at each other. It's all fair competition, and it's all healthy competition.
So that is different from what we see even in places that have robust democracies, including in the US, in Europe, and other places, but more so in Africa. We don't see that type of cordiality between opponents that are seeking, you know, power. What is it about Botswana? Is it about the culture? Is it about the people? What does it come down to?
It comes down to the culture and the people. And it comes down to the history of Botswana. It comes down to the foundation that the forefathers have actually laid for us. And I always tell people that even though we are talking about modern-day democracy, but it has long existed in Botswana. When you look at our type of democracy in the past, before the modern day democracy came, we had chiefs. And one of the things that we have is called the Khotla system, where you go to the Khotla. This is a gathering place, and it serves so many purposes. And that's where you can actually express your opinion without fear, without favor, and nobody would actually threaten you to do anything. Mm-hmm. So that's where you exchange things. That's where people actually feel free. And that has actually nicely translated to modern-day democracy in Botswana. In terms of when you're talking about democracy, people have to be free to express themselves. If they want to write things in newspapers, in modern-day media, they are completely free to express themselves, whether in writing, whether in speech, as long as, you know, when you express your democratic rights, you respect others, also the democratic space. Mm. And that's, I think, what is really important about Botswana.
So this is embedded in the DNA of the fabric of Botswana. Modern democratic institutions are really very much founded on the principles of the forefathers.
Yes,
and the governance systems of back in the day.
Yes, and people don't even shy away from expressing their opinions, because there is a traditional Setswana saying that anybody who voices his opinion, everything is nice and clear. So you shouldn't actually disturb somebody's opinion, and nothing is like a stupid opinion. Yeah. So everybody embraces any type of opinion that you do. And I think that has built on the character of Botswana. And that's why everybody is actually tolerant in terms of each other's opinion, and they respect that. Mm-hmm. And that's what the government tries all the time, to be able to protect the other people's rights and freedoms. To express themselves. Yeah. That's embedded in the constitution of the country.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Funganyi. We're chatting with Ambassador Mapoteng, Ambassador of the Republic of Botswana to the United States, to talk about the country's political landscape and democratic legacy as Botswana head to the polls to select the next leader. And this stability has also translated into economic stability, which is, again, ironical, because in many countries that we've seen that are rich in resources, whether it's oil, whether it's diamonds, like for Botswana, there's been also some conflict or mismanagement. But we've seen a stability in Botswana economically that we don't see in other places. How have you been able to manage your resources where everybody benefits? But most importantly, how are you diversifying away from the big resource, which is diamonds?
Yes, I think when we gained independence in 1966, Botswana was actually one of the poorest countries. And we have moved from being one of the poorest countries to a middle income economy today. And this was as a result of the discovery of minerals in the early 70s, and in particular diamond, which has played a critical role in terms of building the infrastructure of Botswana and building all different types of capacity. And one of the most important things which the founding fathers actually did was, unlike in many countries, where the minerals were discovered, particularly diamonds, it was basically not minerals belonging to that particular region of the country, but it was more controlled by the central government. So as a result, the monies that were derived from the diamonds proceeds were actually equally distributed across the country. Mm-hmm. So there was a national development plan that did not prioritize in terms of whether it's north, central, or
not
east.
Regional.
Not regional, mm-hmm. but it was actually basically the national development plan that was partially viewed, and people were actually parliament selecting, and in terms of deciding which areas need to be given priority in terms of developing what type of infrastructure. And I think that's where actually the foundations came, and diamonds actually developed the country. A lot of investment was actually done in human capital in terms of sending people to schools. A lot of people are beneficiaries of that, including myself. Mm. Hospitals, the health sector also benefited quite well in terms of the diamonds. The road infrastructure, rail infrastructure, all different types of infrastructure, to modern-day infrastructure in terms of what we see developing the IT infrastructure. All that was as a result of the diamonds. Mm. But, you know, as we know, these are resources that one day they will finish. The government has realized that and is anticipating that at one point the resources would finish. And as a result, they have gone on fast drive in terms of trying to diversify the economy. And they have looked at the different types of sectors. And one of the sectors is actually the knowledge economy. That's another area, agriculture also. It used to be a dominant sector during independence, but it was definitely overtaken by many sectors. But the government is trying to resuscitate that, particularly when it comes to animal breeding, in terms of improving the breeds of animals so that we can actually even have good access to international markets. Mm-hmm. So those are one of the areas that Botswana is actually looking into.
Now, Botswana, again, is seen as a beacon of stability in Southern Africa, or Africa as a whole. What role does the country play in promoting peace and stability in the region, just in the southern region? And how does it navigate its foreign policy in a sometimes volatile region? We know conflict in places like Mozambique, mm-hmm. you know, and other places where there's been a little bit of tension here and there.
I think, first of all, it's reputation, good reputation, and you earn the reputation. And that's what Botswana has done. It might be a small country, but it has a very bigger voice, both in the Southern African development community, in Africa as a whole, and also in the international arena. And how did it get that strength? How did it get that bigger voice? It's through the principles of democracy, the principles of the rule of law, and trying to subscribe to all the international principles that are actually there. And that's how it earned the reputation. And as a result, when it speaks, and it speaks with authority, and that's the important thing. That's why Botswana all the time is doing this. And it has actually did everything possible in terms of bringing stability, both in the region through its voice. Just recently, we have participated in peacekeeping in Mozambique, and Botswana sent the forces there. In the past, we have also been influential in terms of UN peacekeeping. In Somalia, we have participated there. In Mozambique, also, we have participated there. We have sent contingents. We have as well sent observers to other different countries in Burundi, in Sudan. And that's why Botswana also is trying to play its role in the space of international peace. Mm. And it subscribes to all the regional and international peace organizations. It's a strong member of the United Nations. and it continues to support all the means, all the voices of the UN that are actually advocating for peace. Mm. So that's basically what we intend to do, and we'll continue doing that.
As we're speaking today, the IMF and World Bank meetings are taking place. We have hundreds of delegates from the African continent interfacing with World Bank officials. What is the message that Botswana or the Botswana delegation is bringing to Washington in terms of how they interface on the economic level?
I think the bigger message, where it's not only Botswana, I think most of the countries are talking about all the time, it's a greener economy, moving towards that direction. And I think, as you know, the issue of the World Bank, it's about financing. And I think the major topic is really financing the bigger economy. How do we move to renewable resources, the clean energy? And that's basically where the center of concentration has been. Mm. Yes, also, there's been concentration in terms of how do you resource things like the anti-money laundering things. There have been talks, especially in side meetings, in terms of a cross-border financing or cross-border transactions, and how do you actually deal with that? How do you come with the standard rules, regulations in terms of monitoring and ensuring that you put in close proximity anti-money laundering rules and regulations? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the space has all been. The talk has been at the World Bank and IMF.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to ask you finally, I guess briefly, the U.S.-Botswana relationship and how it has evolved over the years. You know, you have just come to DC and been appointed as the ambassador. How do you want to see this relationship evolving? Just in 1 minute.
Thank you so much. U.S. and Botswana has had very long relationships right from 1966 when we gained independence. And the U.S. has been very instrumental in terms of assisting us in building capacity, human capacity in the education system. They have been very instrumental in the agricultural sector. They have been also very instrumental in the mineral sector, as well as the defense sector, particularly in terms of resourcing us in training, in peacekeeping operations. And that, and right now we are busy, continue to engage with the U.S. and finding out how much can we be able to also gain in terms of accessing the U.S. markets, particularly in beef and citrus. And the U.S. has been the largest consumer of Botswana diamonds. Actually, 56% of the world diamonds are consumed in the U.S. And the majority of those diamonds are from Botswana. So when we're talking about an economy that is more reliant on diamonds, 76%, and we have that 56%, 60% lending in the U.S., we continue to build that cooperation, particularly along the aspect of not necessarily selling rough diamonds, but looking into value chain in terms of diamonds. Mm-hmm. We value want to addition. Participate in that value addition space, right all the way from not only just mining the diamonds, designing, polishing, and as well as selling and actually playing a role at the far end of the spectrum.
Ambassador Mputin, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Ambassador Fort Churchill Mputin, Ambassador of the Republic of Botswana to the United States. Let's take a quick break and listen to your views on the upcoming U.S. elections.
Yes, they matter because, you know, U.S. being a superpower, and we, particularly Uganda, I think we earn about $1 billion in funding, so they do matter because the government that sits in power is what, you know, the government that sits in power in the U.S. is in a way determinant in terms of funding, in terms of what we get as African countries from them.
Yeah, they do matter because we normally get most of the money from the Western world. So U.S. is one of the stakeholders that give Ugandans or our country donations through agencies, through NGOs. So we would love, because of our connection with them, because of the international relations with them, we wouldn't want to see somebody who would take over the presidency and does not take care of us. And Kamala being a black lady, and I being a black man here in Africa, in Uganda, I would love to see Kamala win because of that, because of the race.
Well, I think it goes both ways. Number one, America being like a great nation, us following is like, you know, who wouldn't want to follow American politics? So it would be great.
The U.S. election, they don't really matter to me. Maybe they matter to other people, but to me, they don't really matter. So the reason is I'm not that into politics. I am not a politician to know whether they matter or they don't matter.
Well, U.S. elections matter to us because for quite some time, U.S. has been supporting Uganda. Most of our projects in Uganda are funded by Americans. If you look at the AIDS scourge, for quite some time, U.S. has been pumping a lot of money. So it really matters for us.
Yes, the U.S. elections matter a lot. The aid we get, it depends on who is the president at times. Because if you see the policies of Trump and then Kamala Harris, they will really affect us as a country.
Those were some of your views and opinions on the upcoming U.S. elections. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. On our last episode, we had a conversation with Sierra Leonean hip-hop artist Cao De Niro about his latest album, Heroes, a 15-track project that pays tribute to Africa's Pan-African heroes. In our second part of the conversation, we pick up from where we left off, with Cao De Niro talking about his motivation to sing about the themes of Pan-Africanism and Pan-African heroes like Sankara, Sekou Toure, Nkrumah, and many others.
My heroes. Uh-huh. The heroes. Oh, yeah.
Well, it hurts me most times, you know, like I remember I went to Ghana one time. I was there, and you know, we talking. I'm having a discussion with a driver that was driving me around, and I'm like, "Yo, so you guys are close to Burkina Faso?" And he was like, "Oh, that place, that's a village." So I'm like, "Yeah, you know, one African is thinking he's superior than the other, yeah. You know."
And those are already divisions that are unnecessary divisions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like before all the boundaries and borders and flags, this was a one territory place. Where it's tribes trading amongst each other, you know, with no country flag. You know, you have the Yorubas traveling, they will come, the Hausa, they will come all the way and do business with the Ashantis. You have the Madingos coming from here. The Fulanis travel all the way from East Africa, all the way to West Africa and settle. Mm. They're from Ethiopia, that area. Mm. That's why you see the Fulani with their face.
Yes, they look like Ethiopians. People, yes.
So this was what was going on in the continent before all the separation and borders and flags. So I want young people to go back to that mentality that, yo, you know, we are one people, you know? Mm. It's just somebody came and separated us. The moment we grasp to that, I think it will make a better day for Africa and for us.
And in this album also, you touch upon the idea of leaders, African leaders, being loyal to their colonial powers. How do you think African leadership can break away from this legacy and truly serve their people?
Well, it's really about internal unity, you know, because once a house that's not standing together is easy to fall, you know. But I guess it's because of selfishness. Some people have investments in different places. That's their interest. So they're not looking at the bigger picture to where it's for a generation and a people, you know. The leaders that stood for people, they're no longer here. You know, some of these guys, we have some, a few, you know, like, you know, I would really call my president a diplomatic revolutionary. You know, like he was recently just at the UN and he gave a speech that was really mind blowing about the Security Council involving a lot of African leaders in their establishment, you know. Like he made a statement that most of the rules that the Security Council created was when Africa was in colonialism still.
So they don't count really for the reality right now.
So we have to improvise and, you know, we need a voice, a bigger voice in the Security Council and all this lawmaking.
Absolutely. So let's share some of your creative process. You know, you are now an ambassador, you have a full office, or a minister, whatever the title you have. You are, I don't know, you wouldn't really call yourself a politician. I don't think that is a term that you want to, you know, attach to yourself.
I'm just social conscious.
Right.
But how
did you select the themes and the collaborators and the production styles for this album?
Well, like I said previously on another interview, you know, when I'm working on an album, you know, it's not just self-centered. You know, I take ideas and, you know, I listen to advice and, you know, I might send a record to somebody like my manager, you know, Coscolino, and you'll be like, you know, you'll be like, Kyle, this is not 1995, man. That flow is like, you know what I mean? Like, it'll hurt me, but then I'll be like, hey, maybe he has a point. Mm. You know, I have to go back to the drawing board and see how I can modernize things, you know?
Yeah.
So, like I did a song, My Sound, you know, on the album. I featured two Nigerian artists. He totally sent me some records. Like, you know, I remember 3 years ago, he was telling me about different artists like Kyle. You forget about the famous Nigerian artists. Work with the ones that's coming up. So by the time they blew up, you know, you already got records with them, you know. And I listened this time. We did a club banger, you know, My Sound, one of the best records on the album, you know. And I have a phenomenal producer. Shout out to my boy, Lord Mo. You know, I work with different producers, but I'll give him an idea, you know, and I'll help through the production process. Mm. I want the sound to sound like this, and we create it. We go back to the drawing board. So, you know, I'm very, very involved in creating, you know, all this masterpiece. Collaborations, you know, I reached out to someone like Mode 9. Mode 9 is like a legend when you think about Nigerian hip-hop. Mm. You know, he's been a friend for over 8-9 years. We've been talking since he was in Lagos. He's like a pioneer, Nigerian hip-hop.
Absolutely.
Pioneer.
I don't know him. So, I know Mode 9. Yeah, Mode 9. Sure, yeah.
So he has a lot of love and respect for me, and we communicated. I sent him a couple of beats. He's a very hot, very difficult guy, you know. You just don't send him any beats. He doesn't just jump on anything. Mm. So when
he's
I
very
sent,
selective, absolutely.
Yeah, very,
yes.
Very selective.
Yeah.
I sent him this primo type hip hop backpack beats, and he loved it. That's his area, his niche, you know. I sent the chorus.
Which songs did he produce on the album?
The Essence.
The Essence.
The Essence is straight hip hop, you know, backpack hip hop. Yeah. So, he came up with the idea of the hook. He like, all right, listen, let's sample Il Bliss. Il Bliss is another Nigerian hip-hop artist. Mm. He like, Il Bliss is my guy. I'll get the vocals. So we sampled Il Bliss on the chorus. And it became
it
a phenomenal hip-hop record.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the Sierra Leonean music industry. Now that you're fully engaged on the policy-making side, what is the missing link for it to be able to be a viable commercial success, as we have seen Afrobeats in Nigeria?
Well, just a couple of things. You know, I've had several meetings, like especially with the producers in Sierra Leone. We have great producers, but what we lack is that signature sound. You know, Nigeria has a signature sound, which is Afrobeats. You know, the East Africans, they have a signature sound, bonga music. I think that's how they call it.
Bongo.
Bongo music.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as you hear it, you're like, oh, that's them. Amapiano, South Africa, they have a, you know, they have something that they are known for. So we have traditional music called Bubu and Gumbe. You know,
you want to capitalize on
yes,
that. Yes.
If we can capitalize from that and create a signature sound and maybe put out some rhythms like the Jamaicans doing, they have one beat, all the big artists jump on that beat, make it national anthem to where everybody's getting used to that. Then from that, we know to where the producers pass that knowledge to all anyone doing production. Mm. This is the BPM that you have to follow. This is the signature, even if you create it your own way. But then we have a signature. I think
what would you say is the state of Sierra Leonean's music industry right now? How has it evolved over the last 15 years when you've been in the industry?
In the 2000s, we were doing great. I mean, phenomenal. We had artists selling out stadiums, touring, you know. Actually, what was significant was B-Square had their first stadium event in Sierra Leone.
I remember that,
they said it on CNN.
Yes.
That's after that show in Freetown, they went international, you know?
It was the catalyst, it was the spark.
And that happened in Freetown.
Yes.
So, you know, we were doing great in the beginning, but something happened, a vacuum, to where the artists start traveling and living the vacuum in the industry back home, you know. So new groups of artists have to emerge, you know, and they didn't have artist development. These guys are just thinking about the fame, you know. There's a couple of good ones, but now things have started to pick up again.
Never live to witness feeling the glory. I'm just here to tell you really the story.
That was Sierra Leonean hip-hop artist Kawo De Niro. And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all of you for tuning in. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are at VOA Africa on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. You can also check out our website at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you
A great week ahead, Africa.
This gospel, constantly giving, plans to get the gospel.